Maybe for a third association.
Maybe we're being nervous.
But as a government, I'm not sure that's really done something.
You got any more?
Good evening, and thank you for joining us. I will call to order the Pacific City Joint Water Sanitary Authority Budget Hearing. It is 5 o'clock on June 4th, 2019, and we are at the authority headquarters. I'll call the roll for the record. Sean Lambert.
Here.
Cameron Gogas.
Here.
Ann Price.
Here.
For the record, Sean Carlton is absent, and Cameron Gogas is on the telephone with us. Item 3, we are taking testimony for the budget. If there are any folks in the audience that would like to speak to the budget, you have 3 minutes to offer your opinions and comments. Is anybody interested in speaking to the budget? All right. Hearing no comments, I will adjourn the budget hearing at 5:02 p.m. All right, we will move on to the business meeting. I will call to order the Pacific City Joint Water Sanitary Authority Board of Directors business meeting for June 4th, Tuesday of 2019. Call the roll. Sean Lambert.
Here.
Cameron Gogas.
Here.
Ann Price.
Here.
For the record, Sean Carlton is absent and Cameron Gogas is on the phone. Item 3, minutes of the May 7th, 2019 business meeting. Any comments or corrections?
I'll move that we approve the minutes of the May 7th, 2019 business meeting.
Second motion.
It has been moved and seconded that we approve the May 7th, 2019 business meeting minutes. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carries. Item 3B, the meeting minutes for the Budget Committee meeting of May 14th, 2019. Any comments or corrections?
Well, I'll move that we approve the minutes of the May 14th, 2019 Budget Committee meeting.
I second motion.
It has been moved and seconded that we approve the May 14th, 2019 Budget Committee meeting minutes. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Item 4A, accounts payable for May 7th, May 15th, and May 31st of 2019. Any questions? Comments?
I move that we approve the accounts payable for May 7th, May 15th, and May 31st, 2019.
I'll second.
It has been moved and seconded that we approve the accounts payable for May 7th, May 15th, and May 31st of 2019. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carries. Item 4B, any comments on the fiscal year report from the authority manager? Okay. Cameron, any comments?
No.
All right, thank you.
Did all the changes that were talked about for the that they all made this?
Are you speaking about the current fiscal year report, or are you speaking about the budget?
Probably the budget, sorry.
Yeah, I think those corrections were made to the budget, yes.
All right, thank you.
Uh-huh. Item 5, manager's report. Tony?
I don't really have anything on the manager's report this month.
Okay. Any questions for Tony from the board?
Nope.
Okay. Cameron, any questions on the manager's report?
No.
Okay.
No. Just about the letter that I didn't get that copy of Lori's letter. And I think I saw the addition that Tony had sent out.
Yeah, I emailed that this morning.
Okay. I'll get a hard copy. Hard copy later.
Okay.
Alright, item 6A, new business, resolution for the resolution 19-1 amendment for bond closing.
This is a requirement. We already adopted, the board already adopted 19-01 for the bond for the takeout for rural development. This just adds some verbiage that rural development wants in, specifically in regard to the clause in the prior resolution. Refer to the prior resolution by the district's lender. They want that in there. So that's basically it.
All right, so we're adding the line in as required by USDA for the paperwork process. There's
correct.
No changes. Okay. So I'll entertain a motion for such.
I'll move that we approve the amendment to resolution number 1901, a resolution amending resolution number 1901 to replace the first whereas clause.
So is that the, excuse me, is that the part of that that underlined under section replacement whereas clause that you're talking about?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. It's just the underlined language.
Right. All right.
All right, it has been moved and seconded that we approve the amendment to resolution number 1901, a resolution amending resolution number 1901 to replace the first whereas clause. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carries.
So I need, assuming from this, this is for bond counsel that has to go to them with this tomorrow, because the closing will be before the minutes for this board meeting are approved. Okay,
thank you. Item 6B. Master plans proposal.
Is still in progress. Not received the revisions that I requested of parametrics. I thought we might have had those today, but they did not come. So as soon as I get them, I will forward them to the board.
Okay. Item 7, unfinished business. 7A, wastewater treatment improvement project.
All the major work and most of the punch list items have been completed. I am looking to issue substantial completion by mid-June at the latest, if all goes well. There's some things up in the air that have a phone conference with rural development tomorrow that should clarify some things, and we should be able to issue substantial by mid-June.
All right, item 7B, community outreach. Ann and I met. We were to prepare materials for Anna Richter Taylor. As we decided at the last meeting, we were going to get together with her for a short workshop. She is unable to meet with the board during June. She suggested July. I don't know how July is going to be for everybody. But we'll see. And then included in your packet were some of the materials that we were pulling together. When Ann and I talked about this, and Ann, please chime in, there are so many documents that have to do with community outreach. It seemed unfair just to dump those on her without some type of organization. So what we did was to make a list of all of our meetings since 2015, to make a list of all our community outreach since 2015, and then to organize a couple of other pieces there. So you have that in your packets. If anyone has any questions, we'd be happy to address those. Otherwise, that's part of the information that will go to her, along with some samples that she can then read and review. In the meantime, if we don't, because of scheduling, summer's always hard to schedule a workshop, if we don't get to on her, we don't find a workshop date prior to the end of summer, Ann and I also drafted a 2019 draft action plan. It's at the end of that document of things that we are mostly doing now, but had a few other thoughts there, so that if that meeting does get delayed, then the board, when we're all together, can take a look at that and say, this is really where we want to go for the rest of the year while we wait on that next step. We didn't feel like we wanted just to drop it and postpone everything until that happened.
Yeah, since especially we didn't know how long that postponement might be. Yeah. So we wanted to see some steps that we could actually take now, so we pulled that together.
And I do apologize, on a couple of your pages, the headers got messed up as I tried to print four spreadsheets all at one time.
Well, thank you for putting all that stuff together. That's quite the list.
It is quite the list. It's quite impressive to see really how much has been done. I feel like we tend to sometimes get lost in the month-to-month stuff and don't realize how much work that the board is doing. Really, the staff is doing much more than the board is, but how much has gone on over the last 4 or 5 years.
And yeah, we went back 4 or 5 years.
Yes. Have we ever done inserts? I know that we did on the billing, which a lot of people don't look at the billing, but how much would they charge to do an insert on our billing? You know, FYI for about regs and everything.
We do bill inserts, and Michelle,
right here,
are you available to comment on the process involved there?
Well, the process is there. We try to make them as small as possible. And if it's just a paragraph, we can do it on a third cut piece of paper, and they just insert it, and it's minimal. But if it's a letter, whereas it's a whole page, or two pages, it could increase postage and or paper costs. But it's not very expensive.
And if you receive your bill electronically, it arrives as an attachment.
Correct.
To your bill on the email. So
how many people do paper by bill, by email, or
probably out of 1,400, about 400.
That's quite a bit.
No, actually, I think it's low. We'd like to get 50% at least, but.
And maybe that.
What does everybody think about an insert? I mean, just FYI about like regs. You know, how many people really understand, you know, putting those regs into the septic system?
Right, and you can see from the information included in the board packet where we've done that before, and then you can see on the draft plan for draft actions for 2019 where we might do that kind of thing again. So these are the kinds of things we'll be discussing at our next workshop with regards to community outreach. Good ideas, though.
Yeah. The only problem is July 9th is not a good day for me.
All right. Well, why don't I send out a doodle poll and make it quite extensive, and we'll see what we come up with.
All right. Yeah, the 9th and the 15th, so yeah, doodle poll, yeah.
All right, thank you. Anything else on community outreach, Sean? All right. Item 7C, asbestos cement pipe. So we've had quite a few discussions regarding questions from the community regarding the asbestos cement pipe. And there's been quite a bit of misinformation out there. So I thought that we'd do three different things tonight. One is we want to take a look and have Gene Johnson present a literature review, and then we want to take a look at a frequently questions asked list that we might be able to begin to put together to get on our website and get out and share with people. And then we may or may not want to go farther with the water testing frequency discussion, because I know that Sean Carlton has some strong opinions and isn't able to be with us tonight. So let's start that section with the literature review. And we've invited Jean Johnson to join us tonight. Jean probably can better say who he is and what he's done than I can, but let me give it a little bit of a try. Jean has a number of degrees in science and has been the chief scientific advisor to the Michael J. Fox Foundation, and is emeritus professor of neurology and developmental biology at Washington University School of Medicine, and has served as co-director of the Alzheimer's Disease Research Center and nationally on the advisory council of the National Institute of Aging and on the scientific advisory boards of the Alzheimer's Association and the Michael J. Fox Foundation for Parkinson's Research, and he is a fellow of the American Association of the Advancement of Science. So, not that he has research in asbestos, but he understands how to review the academic literature and draw conclusions from it and whether or not that literature is valid. So, Jean, if you would like to take the floor for 10 or 15
minutes.
Can I
sit up here?
You're welcome to. Well, we took your chair.
We took your chair away.
Okay.
You can bring that one in the middle, though.
You can have this one.
Thank you. So first, a caveat is the primary biology or pathology we're interested here is with asbestos is cancer, which is the primary problem associated with asbestos, or that we would be concerned about. And so the studies that we're going to discuss are epidemiological studies, which address the question of does exposure to asbestos primarily in drinking water cause an increase in cancer? Primarily, the literature is broader, but primarily what we'd be interested in to make the most biological sense would be cancers of the GI tract, although some of the studies actually have access to data on all kinds of tumors, so they're in there. So the caveat would be, I'm not an epidemiologist, I'm not a biostatistician, I'm not a cancer expert, but I know how to read the scientific literature, and in my various advisory roles with foundations and the government, we've been responsible for this kind of genre of work and to evaluate not only the literature, but to evaluate grants or people who are asking us for money to do this kind of work, primarily in the context of neurodegenerative disease. But the basic issues are the same. So the types of studies that are out there that address the question is, does ingestion of asbestos cause cancer, are first in the studies in the drinking water, and this is actually a pretty small literature. The vast majority of the literature on asbestos deals with lung cancer, or the mesothelioma and the pulmonary inflammation and pulmonary cancers caused by asbestos. And there's no question asbestos is an enormous risk factor and is a carcinogen that causes mesothelioma and other chronic conditions of the lung. A considerable amount of the literature, which I did not review because it's a separate literature, deals with asbestos particularly among asbestos workers, either asbestos miners or people who worked, for example, installing insulation in ships, which was asbestos, where they're surrounded by asbestos in the air, it's inhaled into their lungs, and primarily those studies are focused in on lung cancer, but if there's asbestos in the air and you're breathing through your mouth, you can take in asbestos into your mouth and you will swallow it and you will ingest it and it'll gain access to the GI tract. So there is some literature there, probably more literature there than there is in drinking water. Now, in the studies of the drinking water, There are, and this is a literature that goes back into the early 70s and through about the year 2000, and basically the systematic study of this phenomenon seems to have died out about the year 2000, and we can discuss why that is. And there's some complications in assessing the drinking water studies, and there are two kinds. Actually, what's most informative, I think, to us is the studies where people have studied the potential cancer-causing effects of asbestos in drinking water, not from asbestos cement pipes, but from where the water supply that they're using, the raw water, comes from a source that has a lot of asbestos in it. So asbestos, as you may recall, is a mineral. It's obtained by mining it. It's a magnesium silicate. It's mined, so it's ubiquitous in the environment, but there are some places where there's a lot more than others. So many of the most informative studies, I think, are the studies where people have looked in situations where very high amounts of asbestos have been present for years in the water supply that serves various cities, and we'll talk about that. There are actually only three papers I can find about looking at the incidence of cancers in response to asbestos that's coming out of asbestos cement pipes. And in each case, those were motivated by the fact that in those towns or those water supplies that serve a large enough area that you could actually study, the water source in those environments was very corrosive, has a very low pH, so it's acidic, it has low calcium carbonate concentrations in the water, so it's very conducive to the erosion of cement pipes. So that's what precipitated studies in those, because they could actually detect water coming, asbestos in the water coming out of the cement pipes, and with the knowledge that that asbestos was not coming from the water that was coming into the system, that was being added to the water through the corrosion of cement pipes. So there are many complications in these kinds of studies that compromise the definitiveness of this literature. And there several of those are that, one, we're dealing with an endpoint of cancer, and it's likely that there's a 20-year delay or more between when you're exposed to asbestos and when you would manifest a clinical cancer. So there's a long delay between when people would be exposed, or their exposure is initiated, and when the endpoint of your study, which it would be a cancer, appears. Very often it's difficult to assign exactly when the cancer exposure was initiated. This is particularly true in those small number of studies that actually address the issue in cement pipes, whereas in those where it's from the problem is there's a lot of asbestos in the source, most of those cases they know for people have been ingesting asbestos-containing water for decades, so that is not so complicated. But assessing the length of exposure of individuals, so presumably the chances of causing cancer is going to be dependent upon the length of exposure. Well, the problem you have is humans in the wild are a very difficult experimental animal to work with, because people move in and out of an area. So most of these studies are ecological studies. That is, they're studying groups of people based on geography. That is, so they're looking at populations of people, not necessarily individuals with one rare exception. They're looking at groups of people who are defined by geography, but there is always some level of people coming in and people going out. And that is not something that you can actually quantify in the data. And also that this is complicated by this cancer, like many cancers, is age dependent. So the older you are, the greater your risk is. So you need enough to actually stratify the data by age. Some studies, there's a complication that the endpoint is either cancer incidence versus cancer mortality. And cancer mortality is usually derived from death certificate data, which is notoriously unreliable. And then there's a problem in virtually all of these studies with data quality that's driven by limitations in the sample size. So if you're dealing with a cancer that is rare, in fact, in some ways, if the asbestos was causing cancer, a rare cancer, it's actually easier to spot than if you were looking at a marginal increase in the rate of a more common cancer. And lastly, that a big problem in these data is a statistical issue. That is, so that people will often report that comparing group A to group B, are they different? You'll do a standard t-test or some variation thereof, and that you will ask if it's statistically significant if the p-value is less than 0.05. What that means is that there's less than a 1 in 20 chance that difference that you see would occur by chance as opposed to being driven by a real biological phenomenon. In most of these studies, they're looking at sets of data with multiple cancers broken down by age, by sex, by whether they smoke or not. The problem you end up with is you may have 100 comparisons to make in this study. However, what that also means that you're going to find some differences that occur simply by chance. And so what you look for is, so for example, if I would find an increase in a cancer, if I broke that data down to males and females, if I would have no reason to think there'd be a difference, do I see the same change in males that I see in females? And if you see it in both, when you break it down, that would suggest that it's more likely to be a real phenomenon than if it's just in one gender and not the other, when you don't have any biological basis to think there should be a gender difference in the incidence of this cancer. So let's go through what the data is. So first I'd like to talk about the papers. There's about six of them where the source of the water supply, as opposed to asbestos cement pipes, is the source of the asbestos that you're measuring. And there have been studies from San Francisco, Duluth, in Canada, in Ontario, and let's see, where else from? Florida. Yes?
Can I ask a question? Would University of Montana be a real good resource since the city that mined asbestos, that no longer is a city there, has, you know, pretty much went away because of asbestos mining?
Well, that could very well be, but I could not find any literature.
And it is one of the main places in the Northwest where asbestos was mined.
Yeah, but I'm actually, I didn't go into that literature because where it's mined, there is an interesting literature there.
Yeah, like at the University of Montana, yeah. I believe they've done, you know.
But this is occupational exposure. This is not exposure. There probably is exposure in the drinking water. But yeah. The big issue there is the of asbestos in the air. It just permeates the whole environment there. And the ingestion of asbestos.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Particularly among the miners. So this actually is an example where a male-female difference you would expect to show up because it was the men that were miners. So if it's in the water, the women would be drinking it, but it would be the men who would be
the
gathering.
The entire town.
Yeah. But as far as I know, there's no publications on that.
Okay.
Can I have you, the audience, hold questions until G's through?
Well, I don't mind people interrupting. I'd rather. Okay, I'm there.
The town is Lima, by the way. Lima, Montana, is the town.
Yeah. So in any event, so there are several of these studies.
Okay.
I mean, and I think the main point I want to make, there are more studies that are involved in the problem being in the source, and that the level of asbestos in the water, when the source of the water is the problem, is usually 10 to 100 times higher, almost always, 10 to 100 times or more than that, higher than it is in those situations that were motivated by leaky asbestos cement pipes. So these are the ones where you would actually have the best chance of finding something, because the exposure is probably for a longer duration and at a much higher level than coming out of asbestos cement pipes. And the bottom line on all these studies, and we could go through individual ones, is what most studies find is very little. There, an interesting one in San Francisco. So that's a, you know, the water supply of San Francisco for many, many decades had levels of asbestos between 10 and 100 million parts, million fibers per liter. Okay, and they did in fact find some hints. So they did a bazillion comparisons, and they did find some things, for example, that would make biological sense of an increase in stomach cancer in men, but they didn't find it in women. What they also found is a slight increases in some other cancers, but usually not in both genders. And this probably from my reading, probably the strongest study of this genre. So it is suggestive of that there may be, and this makes biological sense, of asbestos exposure and stomach cancer. However, for example, there were other things talking about this. There were other groups where you cut it where there was statistically significant, based on a single comparison, where asbestos would have appeared to be protective. So there was a significant decrease in the number of tumors in the female reproductive system of several kinds. So maybe it's real, but it makes no biological sense. Others did studies in Duluth, Minnesota, where for many years some kind of iron processing plant was dumping oodles of asbestos right into Lake Superior, not far up, I guess it's not upstream, but far distance from the water intake from Duluth. So they did a study. So those people had been exposed for 20 or 25 years. They found really nothing that they felt was convincing. And there have been a couple of others. San Francisco. Oh, one a particularly interesting one in our neck of the woods is in Everett, Washington. It turns out that the Sultan River, any familiar with the Sultan River, which is the source of the water supply for Everett, Washington, had been for many, many decades, contains about 200 million asbestos fibers per liter. Okay, very, 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 very high level. They did a case control study, which obviates some of the criticisms of the more general ecological studies, and basically they found nothing that they felt was a reliable signal here. There have been other studies, a study of Norwegian lighthouse attendants who got their water not from a water supply per se, but they just took water coming off their roof into a cistern, and that roof was asbestos shingles. And the levels of asbestos in that water was 1.8 to 71 billion fibers per liter, astronomical level. This too also found a faint signal, a signal that in stomach cancer among these men, but they also found an increase among those lighthouse keepers who did not work at lighthouses that collected water this way. And they were comparing to the rural population of Norway. So it again was suggestive, but far, far from definitive. Now, if we move to the ones with the pipes that contain asbestos cement, where the studies were motivated by the fact that the water was corrosive and they could document levels of asbestos showing up in the drinking water. And I can only find three such studies. All of those studies, as I said before, the levels of asbestos were an order of magnitude below the others, although probably six orders of magnitude lower than the Norway study. So that the levels that they would be finding would be anywhere from in the ballpark of a half to a million parts or million fibers per liter, which is the measure. And all three of those studies basically found nothing. Now, those studies are complicated and make us less secure by the fact that there was uncertainty as to how long these people had been exposed to the asbestos. But many of these involved a respectable number of subjects in the control group and the exposed group in the orders of tens of thousands. So like I said, this was in Florida, New York, and Connecticut, where apparently in Connecticut, about half the population of Connecticut is in water supplies that are supplied by asbestos cement pipes. So the bottom line, after I've reviewed all this literature, what can we conclude? And the answer is we cannot conclude anything with a very, very high level of confidence. There was a paper written in 1983 summarizing all the literature to that point, and most of the literature actually precedes 1983. There is not much literature in the last 30 years other than one of the papers, the Woodstock paper, was a paper in 98. And what they said to resolve this, to be confident that there was nothing, would involve a careful case control study, not these ecological studies, that would involve hundreds of thousands of individuals in each group to resolve this, to be confident that there was no increase in any cancer caused by the oral ingestion in drinking water. And that comment would apply mostly to these where the asbestos is in the incoming water, not the water that goes out. So my conclusion is there's no compelling or even particularly credible data that the exposure to asbestos in drinking water causes any form of gastrointestinal cancer. On the flip side, we cannot exclude the possibility that very high levels of asbestos could not cause a modest increase in the level of cancer of some form or another. So we have neither definitive positive nor definitive negative results. So for example, we cannot exclude that there may be, for example, an increase in cancer that would affect 1 in 100,000 people. I think what we can say with confidence is that among all the things in our environment to which we are exposed, whether they're natural or man-made, the risk of asbestos in our drinking water, particularly at the levels that would ever come out of asbestic pipes, is so far down on the list of our threats, of our environmental threats, that it's well off the chart. And we'll never know for sure. And part of the problem is, as I said, this literature seems to have stopped. So I've looked at what they recommend in Australia is they say there's no risk. The World Health Organization in the last date, and I can find this 202, says that they think that there's not a significant risk of asbestos in the water. And I would say I would feel very confident I feel very confident now drinking Pacific City water that cancer risk from asbestos is the least of our concerns in our environment for causing cancer. That said, I think that we should monitor. Our pipes are getting old. Age of pipes is a risk factor for deterioration. I think that we should monitor more frequently. But I have no concern. You know, I'll drink this water. My grandchildren will drink this water. I have no concern that the level of asbestos that could leach into the water from asbestos pipes, particularly if it's detected and rectified within a reasonable amount of time, represents any realistic risk to the public health in Pacific City.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks, Gene. I really appreciate
you. Thank you for that.
Going through that literature. I know that took a lot of time and a lot of...
Well, it's actually kind of interesting. I learned about asbestos.
Yeah,
any questions?
Well, I have a comment. First, I gave you the wrong town. It's Libby, not Lyon.
Oh, yeah. Libby, Montana. That makes more sense.
But I was also confused about the concentrations. You talked about some billions per liter, yes. Millions, and then a half a million. And so I guess the question is, what is our water?
Our water is not detectable, which means that, is that correct, Tony? Below 100,000 fibers per liter is not detectable. The method of detection is actually pretty tedious. It's done by electron microscopy. So they have to concentrate the sample. I think this is normally done on like microfiber filters. And then they look at it under an electron microscope and do several fields. And I'm not sure if they've got image analysis software now or it's just done by hand. But it's a very, very tedious. So the level of detection is 100,000. In the last data I saw, and maybe there's more recent, it was 1999, it's kind of interesting that in Oregon really does not have this problem of asbestos to a significant degree being in the water on the intake source. That's a big problem in Washington. It's a big problem in Northern California, but somehow we dodge the bullet here in the middle. So they reported something like 500 different water systems reporting data in 2009, somewhere between 1 in 5% had levels that were detectable. And none of the reporting stations had a level of above 7 million fibers per liter, which is what the EPA, and I have not been able to find exactly where they came up with this number, but the magic number is you don't want it to get above 7 million fibers per liter. But nobody in Oregon had those kind of levels. But again, to go back, so the orders of magnitude, the levels in our water now would be less than 100,000. The levels in water in those water supplies, and we don't have corrosive water, right? We don't have low pH water or low calcium carbonate water. So in those systems that did have a breach and lost asbestos from the pipes, the order of magnitude was in the hundreds of thousands to low single-digit million per liter. Okay, the numbers in San Francisco, Everett, Washington, Duluth, Minnesota, were in the order of 10 to 200 million fibers per liter. And the level in the Norwegian study coming off the roofs of the asbestos shingles was 1 to 70 billion fibers per liter. So I would expect if we do see leakage out of ours, that what we're going to see are levels in the order of a couple hundred thousand. We would detect that. And then, Tony, if would you have a mechanism to localize where that would be coming from? Because, you know, you said that about 10 or 12% of the pipes here are asbestos. That, from my reading, seemed to be about right. I think, depending on the country, anywhere between 5 and 25% of the population is drinking water that goes through asbestos pipes. So could you localize that and rip that pipe out and replace it, or would that be a challenge?
Yeah, it would would definitely be a challenge. Mm-hmm. But things would have to be evaluated if that were the case.
Yeah, so in any event, I mean, I think that our water pipes are getting old. I mean, mm-hmm. all these pipes where there was a problem, those pipes had been in there for 30, 40, 50 years yeah. under harsh conditions, and they were starting to leak, and the levels were low. So I think that if we started to see a problem, the levels would be low, low enough that I would have no significant concern, but that would tell you that at some point there has to be a program to... I guess these pipes really don't, maybe even less, deteriorate as a plain pipe that doesn't have asbestos in it. Probably asbestos actually retards the degradation of the pipe. But it's, there's no evidence that it makes it any worse.
I couldn't say that with any certainty.
Yeah, it doesn't make it any worse.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean...
The concrete hang together better, and so you can make a lighter weight pipe.
Yeah, it does make a lighter weight.
That's what the whole purpose of it is.
Right, right.
But one of the key elements that I'm taking away from this is that pipe is, even though it may be old, there's not significant deterioration of that material unless you have a highly corrosive water source.
No, I would, well, highly corrosive water source
or high
will
high
make pH. It go faster.
Okay.
I mean,
right.
these pipes are going to fail eventually.
Eventually, yes.
Yes. But all the ones where, you know, where these pipes were like in there for 30 or 40 years and they were now having problems, these all came from places that reported there's something called a corrosivity index right. or something like this. They had a high corrosivity index.
Yes.
So presumably that's the reason why they were seeing failure at 30 years instead of, I don't know, 50 or 70 or 100 years or when these pipes in our system are going to go. And apparently, you know, so I was looking on the website for the water supply of Newport, actually posted theirs are like ice, they're not detected. And they say the reason they do it is because they've got asbestos pipes too. And I don't know how long theirs have been there, but there must be an awful lot of water supply systems in Oregon that have some percentage of their pipe inventory is these things.
Yeah.
So
a lot of communities right around us have a lot of AC pipe.
Mm-hmm. So I think we're fortunate, we're at less risk because the corrosivity of our water is less. So I would expect that if we do start to see leaching, it's likely to be less severe than was seen in these other places where they have more corrosive water. But that's just, I suspect, I don't know that's true. Okay. But the bottom line is, you know, if you report that there's leaching of you can see 200,000 or 300,000 or even 1,000,000 in this, I'm not going to get panicky and tell my grandkids not to drink the water. I think that compared to the people who've been drinking it in Everett, Washington for 30 or 40 years, this is very, very small potatoes.
Director Gogas, did you have a question?
Yes. Mr. Johnson, you said something about asbestos in the sewer, so we just a little bit earlier.
Asbestos in what?
In the sewer. Is more likely to have asbestos in the sewer than the water?
No, I didn't say it. I'm sorry, maybe I misspoke.
Was it when he was talking about the cistern where the water was coming off the roof and the water went into a cistern?
No, asbestos pipes are not used in the sewer system.
No,
they are.
They are?
Yeah, but we have none.
But, yeah. Okay.
Thank you so much, Chief.
Okay. Thank you very, very much.
All right. General, stay away from this for a while. Any other comments from the board?
No.
Cameron, any other comments?
Well, it was very informational.
Please.
The concern is not a concern as far as the water, but when it is in airborne, when it's filled, busted up,
Thank you.
Okay.
All right. Moving on to the FAQ discussion. There's some questions in your board packet that we have been drafted, input from a number of people and sources. Is there any addition to this? We want to send this to staff and ask for beginning to get answers so that we can post an educational piece, taking that information from Jean's presentation and putting it out there so that people can be educated. Does that seem reasonable?
Yeah. It all looked quite comprehensive to me.
And I don't know if it's possible, Michelle, but can we split an MP3 file so that Jean's discussion of the literature could be a separate file, that if somebody just wanted to listen to him talk, we could have that available?
You know, I'm not sure. I'll find out for you, though.
Okay. So I think the goal is really educating people on the facts so that we're clear about where that's at. Any other discussion on that?
I don't have any.
Okay. The third item under 7C, water frequency discussion. Sean Carlton had asked if we could delay the discussion and hold until the next meeting, and we needed to move forward because we had invited Jean. How does the board want to proceed with this at this point?
Yeah, I say we delay it for Sean.
That's fine with me.
Okay. All right, then we will take up the discussion of water testing frequency at our next meeting. Item 7D, board duties and responsibilities. I think we finished this. Did we not, the last meeting?
But the policy has not been
updated. Oh, it's not been updated
right.
yet for us to see.
Updated.
Okay. So we'll have that in the next board packet.
That's the plan.
Okay. Yeah, it's like there's nothing been going on.
Right.
Okay. Item 8, guest questions and comments. Yes, Larry.
My credentials pale in comparison to Jean's. However, I have to say I was impressed by the presentation. And I feel sorry for the people in Everett, Washington, drinking such bad water for so long. But I just want to say thank you, Jean. That was a great presentation. And I've learned a lot more about asbestos than I ever thought I wanted to know.
Thank you, Larry. Other questions? Dan?
Actually, I would be interested in what actually they did in Everett, Washington, and that supply in San Francisco also. They kind of just fell out of the literature, at least as best as I can tell, at least the literature that I have access to.
Well, if you happen to get a chance to call them, we'd be interested in that. Mr. Baxter, sir.
I noticed that Tim is not here. I was wondering, is there a way to get a summary to him or a recording so that he could get this out?
Tim emailed today and said he would be out, and he wants a copy of the MP3 within a couple of days.
Okay, good.
So, yes.
And you
Thank
can
you.
Get land
Good point. Another question.
I got a comment.
Yes, Mr. Dillon.
Congratulations to Tom and Carolyn. It was, I think you guys wanted it more than us, but that's all right. Robin and I have kind of put our heads together, and we think we're going to come up with a newsletter over the next year. So we'll come out with 12 newsletters over the next year, and it'll kind of be about water and our journey into the whole water sewer thing. Okay. And so that will be kind of, and we hope to make it open between us. You know, you guys have kind of established us as the enemy, but we're really not. And, you know, we are your public, and we're kind of, so I think this will be a way to kind of explore that. And I really appreciate this, too, because one of the things I think that has been lacking here is good research. And so, I think we'll kind of make her a better PCJ, WSA, and we'll do it together. So anyway, I wrote an open letter. It'll come out in the Headlight Herald tomorrow, so I'll let you guys. I have a copy of it now, so if you wanted to put some into your your public statement, I, you know, you could, but otherwise you can read it in the paper tomorrow. But I think we can turn it more into a scientific endeavor. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions, comments? All right. Item 9, Chair and Director comments.
I'd just like to once again thank Gene for his time and considerable effort. And it's obviously very, very informative and authoritative in your analysis. So I appreciate your time and effort.
I was glad to do it. I learned a lot. It was interesting.
Great.
I think it speaks to the fact of how many well-educated and informed people we have in our community and the fact that they're willing to volunteer their time. I'd hate to see what Gene's building.
Well, you don't say about volunteering. I'm going to send you.
All right, item 10, we will recess for executive session. It's 5:56 under ORS 192662I to review and evaluate the employment-related performance of the chief executive officer of any body of public officer, employee, or staff member who does not request an open hearing. Again, thank you all for coming. We're going into executive session. We'll see you in another meeting. All right, it is 6:47 and we are back from executive session. And we have, I'll entertain a motion post-review of the authority manager.
Oh, I will move that we institute a pay increase of 5% retroactive to May 1st. Okay, there we go.
I'll second the motion.
It has been moved and seconded as a result of the authority manager's review that we increase his compensation by 5% retroactive to May 1st, 2019. Oops.
Okay, so is that, you want to define salary and or deferred compensation?
That we increase salary and or deferred compensation by 5% retroactive to May 1st.
I'll second.
Okay, it has been moved and seconded that as a result of the authority manager review that we increase salary and or deferred compensation by 5% retroactive to May 1st, 2019. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes. It is 6:48. I will adjourn this meeting.